Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our special council meeting for Wednesday the 19th of March. I'd like to declare the meeting open at 6:32, and in doing so respectfully acknowledge the Gadiyara people whose land we're on, respectfully acknowledging the contribution of Gadiyara elders past, present and future in all working together for the betterment of the future city of Port Hedland. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, in terms of attendance, we have attendance as listed with changes to Councillor Gloria Jacob and Councillor Troy Melville listed down as apologies. Approved leave of absence, Councillor David Van Voort. Item 3, public time. Important note, this meeting is being recorded on audio tape as an additional record of the meeting and to assist with minute-taking purposes, which may be released upon request to third parties. If you do not give permission for your recording of your participation, please indicate this at the meeting. The public is also reminded that in accordance with Section 20.3 of the Town of Port Hedland local law on standing orders, nobody shall use any visual or vocal electronic device or instrument to record the proceedings of any meeting unless that person has been given permission by the chairperson to do so. I declare public time open now at 6:34. 3.1, public question time. Could I have an indication of hands who have public questions tonight? Right. Okay, please come to the podium. Please state your name nice and clear.
According to the rules of the special electors meeting held on the 19th of February, standing orders apply. Is the mayor or presiding member exempt from abiding by standing orders at the town of Port Hedland?
No.
Do standing orders apply to everyone, no exception?
Yes.
Can I get an explanation on why the meeting was not run in accordance with standing orders?
It was run under the standing orders as per a special electors meeting.
So you have a good understanding of standing orders then?
Yes.
Okay. From standing orders 9.3, precedent to points of order 9.3, notwithstanding anything contained in standing orders to the contrary, all questions of order at the time arising shall, until decided, suspend the consideration and decisions of all other business. So my question is, why did you not follow the correct procedure when a point of order was called?
I don't think a point of order was called.
Point of order, I called a point of order 3 times.
Well, I heard you mention something about order. The CO had already gone up in readiness to present the reports, so that was already in conveyance. Is there any further questions?
There's lots more. You never heard a point of order. You actually acknowledged me when I called a point of order.
I don't think you'd called it a point of order, but you did say something about order, but I can check in the audio.
I asked.
But that was just once. I didn't hear 3. Your question is?
Why did you not follow the correct procedure when the motion of dissent was called?
Because it wasn't relevant to what we were doing. We were into the reports of officers and we were hearing the presentations from the CEO in regards to the items listed.
Why did the CEO not instruct the mayor on the correct procedure as per the Act when a point of order was called and ignored by the mayor, and again when a motion of dissent was called and ignored?
But it wasn't in accordance with the Act. What you said wasn't in the time and wasn't to be. In the terms of the conveyance of the meeting and the procedures of the meeting was underway and we're in that part of the...
I had a conversation with the newspaper, I'm not sure which lady it was, but she was sat over there and obviously the CEO was over there as well and you were right here. She heard my point of order.
Well, I can't hear what other people hear and unfortunately I do have some hearing issues, but you know, I'm happy to do what I can within the best of my ability. Are there any further questions?
I've got plenty.
Right.
I've got 15 minutes. I don't think anyone else is quiet asking questions.
Yeah,
so.
Mrs. Mary Atwood has indicated she'd like. So I'll take two more questions, then I'll let Mrs. Mary Atwood take her questions.
I'll let her...
You've got two more questions, Mr. Blanco. I'm the presiding officer, and I'm telling you that you've got two more questions, and then we'll hear the questions from...
We have got 15 minutes.
You can have as long as you want tonight.
With the way the meeting was run, how was it possible to put a motion forward as allowed by Standing Orders 20.12?
That was quite clear in the procedures, and it was quite written. It was written, actually, how you were able to put motions forward. Are there any further questions?
Do you know what 20.12 is in standing orders?
Not off the top of my head. What is it in regards to? Can have a look now if you like.
So a person who is not an elector is not entitled to vote at a meeting of electors and may not take part in any discussions at the meeting unless the meeting by a motion requests or authorises person to do so.
Mm-hmm.
How was I able to put that motion forward with you not taking points of order or motions of dissent or anything?
The rules of the special electors meeting, and it was a special electors meeting, were broadcast quite widely a week in advance of the meeting, and they were put out quite clearly and simply in language. So certainly we follow the rules of the meeting as advertised and broadcast.
I have got the guidelines here for the meeting, and a number of areas it states standing orders applies.
So I'm your question is?
I'm just wondering whether standing orders only applies to the public gallery or the people.
So no, they apply to everyone.
So again, my question is, why did you not follow when I asked for a point of order? Why did you not acknowledge the point of order?
Well, I believe I did follow the rules and I did acknowledge what I could.
I'd just like to say that...
Is this a question or a statement?
I'll give you a statement and then that's all right. Why was an elector ordered to remove himself from the elector's position and be seated in the non-elector's position after being authorised as an elector by your own selection criteria and holding an elector's paper issued on entry?
I don't know. I don't even know that happened. Sorry. I have no explanation.
Who authorised that civil rights violation and breach of the Australian Constitution?
No one did.
No one did.
There was no such breach. Are there any further questions? I think you've had your two now, so I'll ask you to sit down and I'll ask Mrs. Mary Atwood to ask her questions and then we can continue on.
I've just got a couple of issues that I'd like to raise. In respect to the Native Hospital site, that house is still located there, and when I made inquiries from DIA, they said that the Shire and Family and Children's Services were going to remove the house. I'm asking, when is that going to happen?
So, CEO?
Through you, Madam Mayor, the house was unlawfully deposited on that site by a contractor. The town is in the process of issuing, or has issued, notices for the removal of the house. At this point in time, we are waiting for compliance with that action. If that doesn't occur, the town at some stage could, of its own cost, which is ratepayers' cost, remove the house. We're trying to have the responsible people move the house as quickly as possible.
So you haven't got a time frame for it?
The notice would have been prescribed within 21 days.
In accordance with the provisions, the notice that they've been given is 61 days. It's to remove the dwelling off site. And we are trying to communicate with the person involved to do it sooner, do it in ASAP.
Also, you're quite aware that the hostel roof is still not being replaced. I'm just wondering, and I know that Mr. White's office in Perth had contacted the Shire about it. What action can you take? Because we're still occupying that place.
Mm.
And I believe that because it's an Aboriginal reserve, we should have access to it, and that the roof should be repaired. You know, they did more damage by removing the sheeting from the roof. I'm just wondering, because I tried to ring the planning when it first happened, because got in contact with Perth, and they said they were contacting you. And when I rang to talk to you, you weren't available. And they put me through to the dog catcher, and he said, this is true, I'm telling you the facts.
Mrs. Atwood, if I can, and just direct to me as the chairperson, I actually, since you raised it, I raised it with the Department of Community, Child Protection and Family Services, and I've actually just written to you. I signed a letter to you just yesterday, but I'll read you the letter in terms of the advice I've received. So I have been chasing it up for you, and I'll just... And I'll just pull you the response that they provided. So then I wrote to you to get your side, then I'll continue taking that up. So I'll just read you the response I was provided. And I've written to you as well.
Sorry, I'm just trying to find it. Just my apologies, I can't.
It's all right, I'll just pull that up because I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to... Oh, here we go. So this is what I've heard. Received from Department of Child Protection and Family Services. We are still in the process of negotiating to transfer the land to the Department of Lands. They previously denied us access to the land to construct our family group home. The Atwood family locked all buildings with their own locking systems and also on our request to do maintenance denied us access. So without the department having any benefit of using the top buildings or the land, we were not prepared to spend money on the two top buildings that is occupied by the Atwoods. At the current moment, we do not have any funds to spend on the buildings that will probably need to be demolished because of the corrosion damage through the years. Lands did ask us to transfer the land to them, and we are now at a stage where we just need to work out how we will do this. So that's the advice I've been received. And I guess that's where I was keen to find from you if you had locked the buildings with your own locking systems and denied
it's
them
been,
access
yeah,
for maintenance.
It's,
that's what
they,
they're saying.
They have every opportunity to maintain the complex.
Yeah.
We've been occupying it since it closed. That's 19 years ago.
Mm.
They have never done any maintenance on it.
Yeah. So we'll continue if we can. Because
but I'll say to you that the reason it's locked because... That's where the Aboriginal site is.
Sure.
And
I knew there'd be another site. There's always two sites to every story.
Two sites, okay?
Yep.
The Native Hospital site is where the Native Hospital was,
mm-hmm.
and then they built the hostel on top of the burial grounds, which is behind.
Mm-hmm.
So they can yell and scream, but there's going to be a fight over it.
Sure. No, I just wanted to let you know I've been working on it, so I have written to you. I think the director's just going to add something
just
as well.
Just through the chair, our building officers have been on site and they've been in communication with the Department of Child Protection and they've advised them of the nature of the building and in particular the roof damage. It's taken a little bit of time, but my understanding is that the Department of Child Protection are sending their property officers to do an inspection of the site to see what can be done in terms of remedying the situation.
When did you access the building and who gave you access to it? I mean, this is what it's all about.
We haven't accessed the building.
So we've undertaken a visual inspection of the site.
From the external area.
And you can see the damage that's actually occurred on the site. We've informed the Department of Child Protection of the damage, and my understanding is that they were going to send their property management officers to have a look.
Okay.
So this is the advice I received on the 17th of March following my first letter from you first raising it. And this is from the Director of Asset Management. So they've said nothing about sending anyone to have a look. So just putting that all into context.
The issue they have is it's an Aboriginal site.
Yep.
And it is very important to the Aboriginal people. And they can't just use it as a mainstream, because it's a reserve on Crown land.
Mm-hmm.
And we will despite the action of Cranskree anyway. But the other issue I want to raise, which I'm very concerned about, is South Hedland. Since the roads were closed, the South Hedland access through next to the shopping centre is really dangerous. The taxis are, a lot of people are using that to access the other side. Well, we often go out to rural estate in that area, and the taxis are just making it really dangerous. I reckon if nothing's done, that side closest to the shop, the parking and taxi ranks should be removed from there, because people are just rushing out, kids are rushing out, and it's a dangerous situation when, you know, you're getting loads of people there now because the banks are there. But very shortly somebody's going to get knocked over and killed there.
So, Mrs. Atwood, we have met with the taxi drivers and the companies that own the taxis, as well as WA Police, as well as Department of Transport. And we are working through a process of not only moving the taxi rank area, providing a queuing area, but also progressing with some traffic calming, potentially looking at making it a one-way street to help calm that traffic and to reduce the traffic, looking at making it light vehicle only, as well as looking at the pedestrian crossing. And the police have been very, very supportive in regards to that installation of the pedestrian crossing. So there's a lot of work happening on that. So I take on board your issues and questions raised, and certainly we'll look forward to keeping you updated with that process. Thanks, Mrs. Atwood. Okay, are there any other questions, or Mr. Blanco, you'd like to finish your questions?
One more. At the special meeting, you struck off a number of motions that you deemed not worthy without helping to modify wording.
I didn't strike off any motions, Mr. Blanco.
Stating at one point, once a decision was made, it could not be rescinded, referring to the Auscorp deal. Can you explain the reason you lied or misled people when the point of order was called as revoking? Yes.
I did not lie, I did not mislead people, and I acted upon the advice that I'd received from the department. Actually had a fairly good idea what sort of motions were going to be raised,
because
and actually
sent it to
you. And actually sought advice from the department. So I did act with all good intention and goodwill to make sure that I was able to act upon the motions that were there and provide the appropriate advice with guidance from the department.
Standing orders 18, revoking or changing decision, states clearly that council can revoke or change a decision, and it's set out.
So quite clearly, though, Mr. Blanco,
clearly it says it can
quite
be done.
Quite clearly, once a decision of the council has been enacted, it has been enacted. You can't change, you can't revoke a decision when the action from the decision has been enacted. And in case of the OSCO, they had been advised in writing of a decision of council, and they were progressing through the development of a lease. It has been enacted.
That was the advice I received as well, Mr. Blanco.
Similar to saying, here's a motion to buy a truck, we go and buy the truck, council can't revoke the decision once the truck's purchased. It's the same situation.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Thanks for your questions, and thank you everyone for your public participation in question time. I'll declare public question time closed at 6:51, thank you. And I'd like to declare public statement time open, 3.2 at 6:51. Any public statements? Please state your name nice and clear.
Camilla Blanco. The whole process surrounding the special electors meeting on the 19th of February was executed to minimise the attendance of electors. Holding the meeting at 2 p.m. clearly restricted mums from attending because they were picking the kids up from school. And with the threat of mass retrenchings from all industries across Hedland, including the town of Port Hedland, because of world economic slowdown, Dad was at work, not considering becoming a statistic on the unemployment line because he wants to take time off attending a community meeting. All in all, the town did very well in reducing the attendance, but the people still came with a 40-plus crowd. Councillors, you need to consider the subjects that were presented and wonder the reasons behind the attendance to that special electors meeting, and then compare that to the general electors meeting held a week later with only 3 attending. Was the reason behind the lack of attendance at the general electors meeting because the mayor acted in such an aggressive manner and showed contempt towards the electors that attended the special electors meeting, offering little to no help on any motion to adjust wording and striking any motion that did not please the presiding monarch? There was no reason to do that, as all motions are considered at the next council meeting by all councillors, not just one. Unless I'm mistaken, all you councillors agree, and all you councillors agree on the outcome before the meeting started. But I don't think that's legal. Most importantly, not acknowledging any point of order. Most do not see the significance of those actions. What does it mean? A standing orders is irrelevant? Does not need to be followed by the president or presiding member? Or is standing orders only to control the peasants in the gallery? Is that democracy? This draws attention to the CEO, whose job it is to advise the proper process and ensure the act and standing orders is followed. That did not happen. The public attending mostly had or have no idea on how or why this system has been developed, that being our current democratic process, and have forgotten the cost of freedom we have today. Our fundamental freedoms have been paid for by our countrymen and women that have died in the First and Second World Wars. Since then, Australia continues to help countries in conflict around the planet to preserve democracy. The proper process has not been followed. I put the blame on the shoulders of you councillors that obviously have no idea of the Local Government Act and regulations, or you have no intention or desire to uphold the proceedings as required by standing orders or the law, but you expect the public to follow the rules when seated in the public gallery, a clear demonstration of double standards and evidence of a democratic system that is being trashed by this council. The elector that was ordered to move from the elector's area to the non-elector's position was discriminated against, and his civil rights as an elector had been violated. The Department of Local Government had advised this council that staff in this case, if no electors being present at the meeting, the staff and elected members would be able to proceed as they should all be electors. But that was not the case for all staff. That's discrimination. This is a quote out of the Australian Human Rights Commission website. Political participation is the basis of democracy and a vital part of the enjoyment of all human rights. The right of all people to vote without any discrimination is one of the most fundamental of all human rights and civil liberties. Your actions have ticked the box of a dictatorship. The path to creating is developed by simple things like these breaches that get overlooked by everyone, but then develops into a democratic crisis. My question to all you councillors is...
This is statement time, Mr. Blanco.
It's certainly a statement. Are you going to let that happen? Are you leaders or are you sheep? Are you prepared to take the bull by the horns, or will you continue with the ostrich scenario and stick your heads in the sand? You all know the motions put forward are designed to make the needed changes in the areas of crisis. Don't change it, support it. That's all.
Thank you for your very interesting and in parts untrue statement. Thank you. Are there any further public statements? Please just come up to the podium. Please state your name.
Julie Garnett. My statement is that I spend a great deal of time at Prettypool, and a lot of people I know spend a lot of time at Prettypool. And it's one of the few natural beauties that Port Hedland has, considering how much industry we have around here and how much infrastructure around that industry. I'm unsure why, I don't believe it's just council, but council allow these people to come from other areas of Australia and propose things that aren't necessary and are actually received well by council, courted by council, when there's actually no public sentiment to encourage this. I wish to go on record saying that Prettypool should not be used in this fashion, because it needs to be available in 50, 100 years' time in its natural state and not as some sort of canal development. That's my
thought. Thank you. Thank you for your statement. Are there any further public statements? Please state your name nice and clear.
Richard Whitwell. what was name?
Yeah, that's all. Sorry. I couldn't hear.
We had a very big win for the public in this area, and that was the race course, where in fact the sort of things we've been hearing here about external people coming in and particular real estate interests really did have that marked down for development. And as a town, we've now got a centre which is going to be very useful for many years. And so I don't think it's correct to say that this council, this group in Port Hedland, people are really that they're always influenced by people coming from outside at all. Okay, it's just an example.
Thank you for your statement. Are there any further public statements? Well, thank you everyone for your participation. I declare public statement time closed at 6:58. Thank you very much. Yes, and Councillor Melville, please be replaced as being an apology to being in attendance. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I'll just give you a moment. Have you got your agenda?
No, it's still at home, that's all right.
That's okay. Have we got, you're able to do that? Is there an agenda?
Yes, ma'am. Choice of leaving work late. Thank you.
That's okay. So we're up to item 4. Questions from members without notice. Councillor De Cash?
Nothing, ma'am.
Councillor Gillingham?
Nothing, thank you, ma'am.
Councillor Hooper?
Nothing, thank you, ma'am.
Councillor Hunt?
Nothing, Madam Presiding Member.
Councillor Taylor?
Nothing, thank you, ma'am.
Councillor Butson?
Mm.
And Councillor Melville?
Nothing,
sorry,
thank
you. Welcome. Okay, item 5, declaration by members to have given due consideration to all matters contained in the business paper presented before us. Could I please have a show of hands? Let the vote record. 7-8. We've got 8 here now. Thanks, Councillor Melville. You've thrown out all my calculations.
I did that on purpose, Madam Mayor.
All right, so disclaimer before we proceed. Members of the public are cautioned against taking any action on council decisions on items on this evening's agenda in which they may have an interest until formal notification in writing by council has been received. Decisions made at this meeting can be revoked pursuant to the Local Government Act 1995. Okay, item 6, reports of officers. Item 6.1.1, degradation of the town's heritage. And with the there's a recommendation there on page 10, but I believe...
I'd like to declare an interest.
Yes.
With regard to item 6.1.1, I disclose that I have an association with the applicant in that I am a member of the Historical Society, and as a consequence, there may be a perception that my impartiality on the matter may be affected. I declare that I will consider this matter on its merits and vote accordingly.
Thank you, Councillor Hunt. Now, I believe, Councillor Hunt, that you actually have put forward an alternate or an addition to the officer's recommendation.
Yes,
we're just pulling that up. And Grace, sorry, Governance, are you aware of that?
Oh, yeah.
Suggesting
50,000. 50,000? So if the X is going to be replaced with 50,000? So just so members of the public can see, there is a change to part two. So part one is as is, with a change to part two, allocates $50,000 in the 2014-15 budget specifically for the commencement of the review of the Municipal Inventory of Heritage Places 2007. This requires an absolute majority vote, councillors. So I have that recommendation there. I have a mover in Councillor Hunt. I have a seconder in Councillor Dekash. Do I have any... points of clarification against? Anyone against that motion? I have a mover and a seconder. Okay, it's passed, 8-0. So it reaches the absolute majority and is passed. Item 6.1.2, implementation of the Pilbara's Port City Growth Plan. With the officer's recommendation on page 14, do I have any points of clarification?
I do.
Yes.
I note that the Port City Growth Plan is a guiding document and was written in a time of unprecedented growth that has not been sustained. I'm just wondering when things don't align from that plan because circumstances have changed, how that is going to be managed.
CEO?
Through Madam Mayor. Councillor Taylor's correct in terms of the guiding document as a strategic document. If there is a need to depart from the growth plan because our environment or our economic circumstances have changed, we'll report on that. And based on this document, if it's a statutory requirement, there's statutory processes to follow. If there are community engagement procedures that should be followed, we'd recommend to council that would go out and explain to the community why that change is being made and the rationale behind the decision or the recommendation at that stage.
Thank you, Madam.
Any further questions?
Yes, I do. I was just wondering if the strategic documents could be named specifically, i.e. in the Port City Growth Plan or Community Strategic Plan, rather than just a general statement like strategic documents.
Through Madam Mayor, we probably have 30 or 40 strategic documents.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a public open space strategy, whether it's a plant replacement strategy, asset management strategies, we're going to have a number of those strategic documents. I guess initially this was referring, and it was raised through the special electors meeting, particularly aimed at the growth plan.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at our suite of documents, there are other strategic documents as well, which we think should be considered in the same light.
Any other questions? Do I have a mover for this recommendation? Councillor Hunt, do I have a seconder? Councillor Hooper, do I have anyone against? The motion is carried, 8-0. Item 6.1.3, Pretty Cool Mixed Use Caravan Park, with the officer's recommendation on page 22. Do I have any points of clarification? Do I have a mover? Councillor Hunt, a seconder. Councillor Butson, do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Item 6.1.4, Town Planning Scheme Review and Caretaker Rights, with the officer's recommendation on page 26. Do I have any points of clarification? Do I have a mover? Moved, Councillor Hunt. Seconded, Councillor Butson. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Item 6.2.1, Reporting and Assessing of Town of Port Hedland Infrastructure, with the officer's recommendation on page 33. Do I have any points of clarification? Moved, Councillor Hunt. Seconded, Councillor Hooper. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Item 6.3.1, community engagement, Town of Port Hedland Way Forward and Future Initiatives, with the officer's recommendation on page 38. Do I have any points of clarification? Moved, Councillor Hunt, seconded, Councillor Taylor. Do I have any against? Motion carried, 8-0. Okay, we are now on page 49. Item 7, confidential items, there are nil. Closure, 8.1, the next ordinary meeting of council will be held next Wednesday the 26th of March, commencing at 5:30 p.m. There's no further business. I declare the meeting closed at 7:08. Thank you very much, members of the public. Thank you very much, staff, CEO and governance. Thank you.